Right, and I imagine that Chris and Jamie.
They're really interested in this class. And they had questions too, I know.
Yeah, well, I said in my email, if we want to extend for one more time, and I can set it, try to get a better date, for people who have questions that weren't answered during this series of classes, we can do that. So we can talk about that after this and see if you're interested in it. But let's pray first, then we'll get started. Father, we thank you for bringing us here. We ask you to be with us as we discuss Good Shepherd and all the things that you're doing here. And we thank you for the grace you've poured out on this church. And we ask you to help us as we consider our relationship to it. We pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen. So today is the brass tacks day. It's the last class. We kind of get down to the nitty-gritty. What does it mean to be a member? What do we expect of members? How is the leadership organized? How do you get involved in a ministry if you want to? And what's the ministry structure? So we have a lot of stuff we're covering. I'll just show you the papers that I've given you so you know what we're looking at when we look at them. This tree is kind of a little diagram that someone made for us that describes how the ministries are related to one another. We'll talk about that in a minute. This is our mission statement right here, which we'll probably talk about second, actually. This is the, you'll notice at the bottom, though, I have also listed all of the Bible studies and classes and mission groups that we have, because that's, as we'll see, a really important part of our thing. This sheet of paper has some, not all, but it has many of the ministries back in front that you can be involved in at Good Shepherd. And that's not to say that's, it's not an exhaustive list, because people sometimes come and they have new ideas about what they want to do. And so we don't want to say they can't use their particular idea, but we'd want to, kind of talk to them and add what needs to be added. And then we have this membership expectation list. You need that one? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I must not have passed this one here. Okay. Make sure I have one too. And I don't. Okay.
Pastor, Martha Rice pointed out something to me. We said, so to be the benefit of being a member is you get to vote.
Yes.
And then Martha said, big deal, you only get to vote once a year.
We only have one meeting a year for voting.
At other churches, they have like meetings almost every month. Mm-hmm. So you're voting all the time.
Right, so that's a good question. Why be a member?
I mean, yeah.
Right. So I think the New Testament kind of understands that every Christian is going to belong to a body, a local body of believers that is committed to helping each individual grow in their knowledge and love of Jesus, and to whom there can be kind of expectations and accountability. So contrast that with, I think, the modern way that people tend to think about church. I'm going to go to the place where I'm most entertained, and when I'm not entertained there anymore, I'm going to go somewhere else. What happens? Well, you're never then submitted to a body of people who are interested in you, love you, and help you grow. So that's the biggest benefit of membership. Okay, so when we talk about membership, yes, by rights you can vote, but that's by far not the best part about me.
I just thought right. I'd bring that.
I'm glad you did.
We don't really get as much. We have little power in the say of what goes on.
That's true with vote. That's true if you talk about just raw political power.
Right.
Absolutely. It's not true. When a member calls and is upset about something, or when a member
the church is very warm.
Yeah,
I mean,
when you need to talk, when you're angry, right? Or when you just, if someone calls me and they're a member, that's a big. Yeah, I want to listen. I want my people who are committed to the church, and we know who are committed to the church, have a voice that's far more influential than someone who just drops in on a Sunday every once in a while and says, "Hey, yeah, I don't like that music. I'm not changing it." So if you're committed to the church and you know our ethos, then we're going to, that provides some give and take here. You have more pull. And I don't mean that in a, like, that means you can influence and manipulate the church. What I mean is you're part of a body, and so your voice really does count at that point in a way that it doesn't and if you're not part of the body. So why don't we just start looking at the leadership structure? And there's not a sheet for that, so this is going to be without anything to look at except what I'm going to draw on the board. If I can touch. top, which I thought was there, and now.
Yeah, I found out it's Chris Jones at the top, right?
Chris Jones at the top of everything, huh?
Well, that's because I've been
he sometimes acts like that.
We've been trying to find out how the hierarchy works.
I just erased this news. Let me just kind of draw a diagram for you. I hope you're not mad at me erasing that, but it's going to have to be erased. The church is kind of has two wings or two branches, basically. And you might think in terms of the three branches of government. Instead of three, we have two. And one of the great things about our political system is the branches have checks and balances. The executive branch has a certain amount of power, and the legislative branch has a certain amount of power, and the judicial branch has a certain amount of power, and they can balance each other out. Well, the two branches of the church, spiritual and temporal, are kind of the same way. Now, by temporal, I don't mean not spiritual, because we're all Christians, right? But there's one body that deals with the temporal concerns of this congregation. That's called the vestry, and that means the vestry has authority over how the money is spent and any kind of disposition of property. You want to sell something or buy something, that would have to go through the vestry, and they oversee the finances. All of that is handled by this group of people. You might think of it as kind of a board, maybe, in other churches. Although we expect that the members of our vestry are going to have the spiritual maturity of we might expect for an elder. We want him or her to be able to think through these decisions biblically, not just as a banker would or a lawyer would, but as a Christian would. So they have rule over the purse, you might say. The vestry has right now, eight total, two wardens. He's on vestry right now. I have to go through new member class, but he's on vestry right now. Two wardens and
one sexton.
The sexton is not on vestry. He's on the staff. So we'll cover that in a minute. I know it's going to be a little confusing. I'm going to this is he's like the wardens have a job to ward or to guard, is the idea. So we have a senior warden and a junior warden. Chris Jones is our senior warden. Daryl Dean is our junior warden. You got to watch out because Don and Daryl Dean are twins, so you got to. Sometimes they'll play little tricks on people.
Daryl's a junior, right?
Daryl's a junior by about a minute or two, and but they look an awful lot alike. But Daryl is our junior warden, and the way those two responsibilities are split up is, the senior warden, if I were to die, would be in charge of helping fill this part of the wing, the setup wing, which I'll describe in a minute. He runs the vestry meetings when I'm not there. He's essentially called the rector's warden. I'm a rector, we'll talk about that in a minute. And since he assists me and advises me about decisions I might need to make. The junior warden is called sometimes the parish warden or the congregation's warden. His concern is he's trying to get his ears to the congregation, hearing what's going on. He's letting me know, letting the senior warden know if there's any problems happening. He's also generally and traditionally in oversees property improvements or changes. So if you see something around the church that looks messy, don't go to the sexton. Go to the junior warden and say, this is not good. You want to go to Daryl Dean and let him know. You could also go to Chris Jones, but that just piles him on top of more work on top of him. So he's going to have a hard time doing that. The other vestry members, we have six of them, and the idea is, I'm also on the vestry. We'll get to this part in a minute, but we try to get an even number of vestry members, because if there's a tie vote, I break the tie. Six vestry members. And again, if when someone comes to me and says, "Hey, can I have money for my rent?" if I have, the vestry has given me a discretionary fund that I can use for that kind of thing, but if I'm out of it, I have to go to the vestry and say, could you help me help this person? I don't have authority over the finances of the, of the church. So I can't really just give out money. When I see somebody in need, I've got to, a lot of it has to go through the church. When we want to have improvements for our organ or paint or anything like that, it all has to go through the vestry. They have to approve it and that sort of thing. So, and the idea there is they're spending the money to promote the gospel. They're as dedicated to that mission statement, which we'll look at in a minute, as I know. So now on the other side is the spiritual care. For spiritual, in traditional terms, it's called the spiritual cure, or the cure of souls. And that is under my headship. We're called a rector, and it's an odd term. We don't use that as much anymore.
Yeah, I get rector and curate confused. I get rector and curate.
I think curates are under the rector.
Yes, the cure would be under the rector, right? If I had an assistant, he'd be called my curate.
I didn't read all those British novels for nothing.
You got it, right? right. Exactly. The rector is essentially, I'm under my bishop, but my bishop can't just come in here and tell us what to do. I have the spiritual cure of this church. So he has to really ask me permission to come in and do things, and I give it to him, of course, or just because I know it's good for me. But I don't have to, technically. The rector has charge over worship, music, theology. Under theology, you put Bible studies, preaching, teaching, anything that has to do with that. Pastoral care, and even though the vestry is the temporal head, I still have say. If someone wants to use the building, I would consult with the vestry, but I could actually say, as long as it didn't cost any money, I would have the ability to say yes, you can use the building. I would need to consult. So I even have property under my headship, although most rectors say, okay, you junior warden, you take care of us.
There are paid positions under the spiritual cure, but not under the vestry.
Yes, so the staff, my assistant, the sexton, the musician, all the staff is under my, they don't answer to the vestry, they answer to me. And so, and I interact between the staff and the vestry, they answer to the, to them. So now I tend to be a hands-off kind of guy. I don't like to micromanage. So I would, for Michael, he's our music director.
And he's so capable, you don't need to manage him.
I don't want to get in his way. I mean, yeah. You do your thing, I'll watch. And so I'm in charge of whoever's teaching a Bible study or a mission group. If someone's leading a mission group and they're not doing a good job, that's my responsibility. If they're doing a good job, that's also my responsibility. All the things that have to do with teaching or preaching ultimately come under my responsibility, and I'm accountable for everything that's said in those venues. So, and that includes Sunday school with the kids. So I'm totally responsible for that kind of thing. Now, the way these things to interact is my salary is paid by these guys. All right. So if they don't like what I'm, let's say tomorrow I wake up and decide, you know what, I think we should be a Jehovah's Witness church. I think we should start saying that Jesus is not God. Well, the vestry could then hold a meeting and just pull my salary. They can't immediately depose me. That has to be the bishop doing that. But they can say, all right, we're just not going to pay you anything. and then we're going to warn the church, so they'll all leave. And so you're going to be able to trouble. So there's a check there on my power. But likewise, the vestry has no power to tell me, it's within the realm of orthodoxy. The vestry has no power to tell me what I can preach, how long I can preach, what books I choose to preach from. They can't tell me who I appoint in these positions. They can, if they don't like who I choose to be music director, they could say, well, we're not going to fund it. But generally, they don't do that. Generally, they'll say, we want to cooperate with the direction you're taking the church. And so there's a kind of a balance here. If the vestry goes off the rails, I have the power of the pulpit. Let's say the vestry decides to become Jehovah's Witness. Well, I can let the whole church know, and then the vestry won't have any money to deal with because the church will stop giving the vestry, giving to them. And, I mean, there's a check and a balance there to avoid really extreme difficulties in the church. So, questions about this so far? Any?
How does the appointment of the wardens and the vestry work?
The vestry is, all these are elected. So the warden has a 2-year term, and after 6 terms, he can no longer be warden. Same thing with the vestry; they have a total of 6 years, but they have 3-year terms. Is there a limit? And then after you get to their limit, they have to take a break for at least a year. But some that gives the opportunity for someone else who's new, who's never been on vestry to serve. So we try in a good, healthy church. What you usually have is a lot of people have served on vestry at least once in their time in the church, and that's what we're looking for. We want a good flow of congregants in leadership, so that everyone has a sense for how the church runs.
Probably keeps us from getting in a rut too.
Yeah, well, when I first got here, we didn't have term limits, and so we had a vestry. Most of the people on which had been there for the old longest guy had been there for 30 years. Mm. Yeah, and it was just,
that's not so good.
You know, no, you gain a lot of power on vestry because you have a lot of influence, and so it was a big battle between me and him most of the time. Great guy, but this is human nature, just the way it goes. And so we have term limits for that, and usually in a healthy church, these two groups will work together because both of them have the same goal. I want to preach the gospel. I want people to know Jesus. They want me to preach the gospel, and they want people to know Jesus. And so there's going to be a cooperation. How do we best do that? How do we best use the resources of this church to spread the gospel? Any other questions about this?
You were going to talk about the sexton.
Yeah, the sexton would fall in, because I have property is ultimately under my thing. And so he's the one who cleans. Now, having said that, since I've delegated my authority over the building to the junior warden, you'd still want to go to the junior warden and say the sexton's...
We only have one sexton.
Yeah, and it you'll notice this is a big church. Sexton...
It would be helpful to have two, actually.
It would, if we had the money.
Because he's sick a lot, too.
He is sick a lot, so he's got some health issues that he's working through. So that's one reason why
But it's money, probably. We need more money.
We would need more money, right, so to hire another person. So in a minute, there are some ways that we can help him. We'll see that in a minute.
Sorry, what's a sexton?
A grave digger in the novels.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's an old English word for someone who cares for the property. It's just like Charles Magula is our sexton. But I guess another church might call that I don't want to say janitor, maybe, or that's not right, janitor, but the...
Caretaker?
Handyman. Yeah, right. Caretaker.
So is he over here?
He's over here because I have ultimate authority over the property, even though it is, you might consider it temporal, I have ultimate authority over it. This is the one area it's kind of hazy, although I can't do anything that costs money.
Okay.
So that's why there has to be a lot of cooperation here. I can't just say, we're going to buy a new $50,000 organ, which happened in a church in Endicott. A woman pastor just decided that she was going to buy a $50,000 pipe organ, and she wrote the check with the church check. And that was a huge violation of these checks and balances. She took over authority that only belongs to the vestry. And the vestry just decided, okay, well, we're taking away your salary. And when there's a problem like that, and this happened to this woman, is if a rector goes rogue, right? So he's doing his own thing. The vestry can call in the bishop, mm-hmm. and the bishop doesn't necessarily have to do anything, but he can, at that point, pull your license to preach and teach in that diocese. And then it will be up to the church. Do we want to listen to the bishop doing that, or do we want to go our own way? So the vestry has part of it. Now, on the other side, if I have a vestry that has gone rogue, I can also call the bishop, and the bishop has the authority to fire a member of the vestry and call for a new election. So there's but that's never happened to Good Shepherd. Came close when we went through the whole homosexuality thing, and there were some liberal people on our vestry.
Oh.
It was a 5-4 vote. I was almost, I broke the tie to keep my job.
So I put myself in.
But yes, we're keeping him. So, I was asked to recuse myself, but I didn't. So
good for you.
So that's our leadership structure. It is, you'll notice, and there's only one pastoral head of the of the church, which is unique among most evangelical churches where you have a plurality of elders all kind of on the same level. I think we get the same effect by having a vestry that has temporal power over over my salary, even though, and we expect these vestry members to be believing Christians who have the interest of the church in mind, and the interest of the gospel in mind. So, got it, Erin? It's confusing. I know. It's kind of a wheels within wheels system. Well, let's go ahead and look at this tree diagram, because underneath my spiritual cure, one thing I've done is I've established a group of people called ministry heads. I'm going to use this black one because I think that might work. Ministry heads. As we grew, I realized there were lots of things that I just couldn't take care of, and we didn't have the money to hire staff.
Yeah.
So I said, why don't we set up a group of people who are not on vestry, but who are devoted lay people to use their gifts in various branches of ministry. And you'll see some of these have changed. This is an older diagram, but we had a prayer ministry, which is kind of being restarted now that Ann Bailey is back. Worship, evangelism, missions, church planting, hospitality, shepherd's bowl, outreach. Now, again, a lot of these branches and ministries have changed and are no longer there. Some of them, we have new ones that are no longer there. This page, actually, that I gave you has all of our active ministries on it. But this gives you, but I wanted to show you this diagram because it shows kind of the structure of our ministries here and the idea that we have with regard to how they work together. So we noticed about 5 or 6 years ago that we had a tendency, because we're a church that does a lot of outreach, we have the Shepherd's Bowl, we have other things, that people would be attracted to Good Shepherd for that reason. We want to come and help people, we want to do nice things. And so they'd come to church and they would join the Shepherd's Bowl, for example. But they didn't know Jesus. So one of the purposes of the Shepherd's Bowl is not just to feed people, but also to provide a platform for evangelism and sharing the gospel when possible, when that avenue opens itself up. But we had a lot of people who were working the Shepherd's Bowl, a lot of them. It's one thing to have one or two on a team, but we had just a lot of people who were on the Shepherd's Bowl who could not articulate the gospel. We didn't know who Jesus was, couldn't explain what it meant to be saved. And in fact, when I asked one guy who was actually prominent in the church at the time, Why are you doing this? Well, it makes me feel good. It makes me feel like a good person. I said, well, do you think you are a good person? Yeah, I'm
great.
A great
person.
What am I doing?
Wow.
So
that was like 5 years ago?
Huh? This is like 5 years ago. So we said, from that moment I said, me and some other people said, let's back away from this weird thing we have going on. And we, from now on, we're going to require anybody who does any kind of ministry in the church to actually be also in the process of being discipled. So we'll also have to be in either a Bible study or a mission group or class. Don't have to be all three, just one of those three. Either Bible study or mission group or class. So there's some sense that they're hearing about Jesus outside of the church service, where I know some of them just sleep, so but in the actual, there's smaller groups of people watching over them. So if you notice on this chart, I know it's kind of weird, but you have the roots going down into the ground, and the ground, I guess, represents the people out there. I know it's really kind of insulting, but that's not, we don't think of them as dirt. But we hope to draw people into our church through being nice and hospitality and inviting people in, all kinds of things. But when someone comes to our church, we're going to and commits to be a member, or commits to wanting to serve in any way, let's put it that way, we're going to require that they be in one of these three things. And then they have, from that perspective, when they're being discipled, they can begin to decide, okay, which ministry avenue do I want to go down? Okay. So if you commit to Good Shepherd and you want to serve, we would ask that you commit to a Bible study or a mission group, or just be here at 9:15 on Sunday morning for Sunday school, one of those three things. Questions about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense.
I was we had a lot of fallout from that. We had some people who actually left the church because they refused, they didn't want to do Bible study or anything. So we lost, I would say, about six people from that decision. But it's all, I think it's been beneficial to us in the long term because we put the gospel front and center. And
you also want to be sure they're talking about the same gospel, too. They could be telling somebody something that you wouldn't agree with.
Right. Or yeah, it just is not biblical. I mean, it's like
they think it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You never know what someone means by that, unless you have this kind of teaching that everyone's involved in and everyone's taking part in. Okay, so any questions about this? So the ministry heads, if you look at this list, this is a more updated list about the things we have. So we have Christian Education, Anna Dreher. You may not know her, but you may. She's our head of that right now. She's been in that ministry for quite a long time. We like to rotate people out of these things, just like with Vestry. They don't want them to be in there forever because they get stagnated and burnt out. And so right now, Anna Dreher is there, but she's been there for a while, so she might take a Sabbath, which we would encourage her to do at some point. And you see in there list of things that we always need, these kinds of ministries. And if you wanted to be involved in one of these things, you wouldn't come to me. You'd go to Anna Dreher, say, hey, how could I be a Sunday school teacher? And she would talk to you, and if you kind of went through her understanding of, she would kind of explain to you what the mission vision is for that particular ministry. And then she'd ultimately want to talk to, have you talk to me, but there's a, since she knows that ministry back and forward, she'd be the one to go to about that. Mission groups, those are small group Bible studies. The way they work is they take the sermon that we do on Sunday. They don't study the sermon, but they do study the passage that I preach from. And the sermon helps do a lot of the exegetical work, and the small group gets together and does some of that, but does a lot of, all right, how do we apply this text? How do we...
Yeah, I finally figured that out. I read the sheet, the information sheet in the program a little better and realized there was a list of questions there for the...
Yeah.
Related to the sermon. So I said, oh, that's what they do.
You can see the questions there in our bulletin. Exactly.
Yeah, they answer them in the mission.
Yeah. Well, it took me a lot.
So we have about, depending on the time of year, we have four or five mission groups right now. We've had six, we've had less. Ben Murphy is the one who's in charge of those mission groups. So if you're looking for, all the times and schedules are listed on the in the bulletin, but if you want to talk to Ben, he might give you some good tips about which one you might be best suited for you. These are really good for getting to know people and getting to be integrated into a community within the church. Now, we used to have an evangelism team, but that's been a notoriously hard position to fill. So I just told Ife to take care of that. So, but if you're interested in evangelism and I'm teaching a class in it right now, but we're trying to get that ministry back up and running. We had a really great guy here for Jason Delancey for a while, and he moved to Houston, and just no one's been able to fill his shoes has been the problem. So we're still kind of hoping that gets settled.
Does Carmen kind of do that?
Carmen does it, but she's outreach, so she has a hard. When we get to that, I'll show you how. Okay. What I mean, but so that's not her. When we say outreach, a good shepherd, we don't mean evangelism, although they're connected, of course. We're talking about doing works of mercy, feeding the poor, doing tutoring, those kinds of things. Ideally, the evangelism coordinator would team up with Carmen and say, okay, how can we leverage these ministries that we're doing to help people get to know Jesus? That would be the idea there. Sometimes that happens well. Sometimes it doesn't.
To me, evangelism is when you get a group and you walk on a band in university and you start talking with students. That's an interesting time.
Well, that is.
Or you stand on a street corner and have someone preach. Or
That's all. The Jason Delancey was open to doing, and he did do something with all of that. So we've gone in the past when the evangelism ministry was up and running, we'd go door to door. Through this neighborhood, passing out leaflets, passing out tracts, talking to people about Jesus and the church and trying to get them to come. And that's totally, we'd love to have that happen. But you can imagine, that's very embarrassing for lots of people to do.
It's hard, and so
you got to have someone who's able to...
Is a real good promoter.
Yes, right.
Yeah. Right. If you answer questions, I'm not up to date. I don't know if I ever will be, but to answer people's questions.
Exactly.
And be able to be coherent.
Right. So hopefully we'll have someone fill that. That's one thing you can pray for this church, that we get someone to help us do this in a good way. So hospitality, that Stephanie Warner essentially takes over that. Now, again, this is mm-hmm. we lost about 30 people. We lost about 30 people 3 years ago. Most of them young couples, and the reason we lost them is it was I've never had this happen in my whole ministry. They all relocated in the same year. Some of them went to Philadelphia, some of them went to Virginia, some of them went to Michigan. It was just all moving away, and it was, they're young couples, they get opportunities and they go. But it just happened to just hit us, like all in a tidal wave. So we were getting, 160, 170 on a Sunday, and we suddenly went down to, 120 or that on a Sunday, which is kind of where we are now. But so a lot of these leadership positions that used to be filled by the people, we still haven't been able to fill in an effective way. So,
but there is growth here. I see it just since I've been coming, which isn't long. I see new people.
There is growth, you're right. But now think about this, because we have ministry heads. So we're going to want someone who's been here for at least a few years before they're going to step into immediate leadership.
These are all new people.
Yeah, and they don't know how things work. So it still takes some time to kind of build up a leadership group after you've lost a lot of them.
Yeah.
I'm of course in charge of worship, but you see underneath each of these categories opportunities to serve.
But what's a teller?
A teller is someone who counts the money, right? So we have two people every Sunday who go in, count the money, write it down. That's something we're in constant need of too, because no one likes to do that, because it means you have to stay after church and help do it.
Do you do that with a computer system?
There's a what is it?
Breeze.
Yeah.
It's a software, online software.
Yeah, I figure you have to. Because I've done it for years and years in a small church, and that was a nightmare enough. I can't imagine.
The software is actually really nice once you figure it out.
I'll bet it's a lot better.
Yeah.
We're also, if you look at this list here, we're in need of people for hospitality team, and some of the people to make look out for visitors and greet them. We don't have that very well. We're in need of the altar guild. I'm not sure if you know what that is.
Yeah, I've
got
that.
Okay. So
it's preparing everything for the front, right?
Yes, exactly. Yes. Getting the flowers out there.
Do the dishes, put the stack up.
Yep, exactly. That's what it is.
So, did you do that at a different church? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah. And probably change the linens or the cloths and all.
It didn't have to be done all the time, but you'd want to change them like once a month at least.
The only things that get changed constantly, I think, are the purifiers.
But the colors get changed all the time.
But you'll notice in Pentecost we're going to be in green for a long time, right? Right. So they do now. They change a lot now because we're.
How many are on the altar guild right now?
We only have three right now.
You're kidding.
Yeah, so we're in a real bad shape. So if anyone wants to help with that, we'd love to have it.
How many do you have?
Well, we've had up to 8 or 9. We've had,
That was like Katie Fold.
Well, I think
was Katie
Fold.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah, but
she Katie Fold was that. Exactly.
I have an altar guild book. How can we read it?
You'd be wonderful.
Prayer, Ann Bailey, she's a doctor, or she's a professor at the
She's going to start a prayer ministry?
Well, when she was here she first came about 4 years ago, then she was one of the 30 who moved away because she had moved to Jamaica. She's come back, and so she's kind of slowly easing her way.
Will she have like prayer sessions?
There was. She used to have at least once a quarter prayer days where we'd all come to the church and pray.
I'll talk to her.
And I think she meets with a group of people at 8 o'clock early before the or during the 8 o'clock service and prays for the church service and prays. She does that. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, you might talk to her. But don't tell her I told you she's the head of that ministry, because she'll run away screaming if I say that. But if you're interested in that kind of thing, you want to talk to her because she's really good at these kinds of things. So Shepherd's Bowl, Ann took that over as far as leading it. We're getting much better than we were. We were really dire and dire.
We only have 5 teams though right now, but it seems to be working.
It's better than we used to have 4, and then for a while we were basically operating on 3. So we've really built up on that. So that's a good. It's good working much better. Outreach, you see that Carmen does the gardening. She tutors over there at Saratoga and does a lot of work over there at Saratoga with those kids. A lot of work, not just tutoring. She leads the outreach team. So if you're interested in that kind of work, talk to her. ACW, that's Anglican Church Women. They're right now focusing on inbound ministry. inside ministry. So they'll visit people when they're sick. They'll help provide meals for shut-ins, those kinds of things. And when we have someone who just comes out of the hospital, like you guys, if you had your baby, I mean, the ACW would be helping put together meals for that.
Yeah, she set up our meals and everything.
Is the prayer shawl part of that, or are they sort of a separate?
Prayer shawl, I should have put that under prayer, because it's another separate thing that I forgot about putting
What's
it up.
What's prayer shawl?
There's people who pray, they knit shawls, and they give them to sick people when they go visit.
Well, I can't knit, so how many?
Well,
I can't either, so I don't take part in that.
I did a little bit at the church I went to in New Jersey, and they made it easy. They just gave us a pattern for a square or a rectangle. You could crochet it, you could knit it. And you turned them in, and there were two or three ladies there who would take all these disparate, relatively the same size, but all different colors. They made the most beautiful afghans out of things I thought, this will never
good stuff, yeah, these are really good knitters in that group, really good chairs, yeah. Then we have missions, and that's Kit Donovan is the head of that, and we devote 10% of our gross income to missions, and we have a number of
that's
different
wonderful.
Ministries we support.
That's
so,
a good spiritual church that does that.
We're always looking for, you know, because every once in a while one ministry will stop being a ministry, so we'll have to put a new thing on it. So we like to try and support missions or ministries that we're connected to personally, so that we can kind of have an idea of what's going on. So Bill and Ann Freund, for example, do this ministry called Shea down in Nicaragua, where they help women learn how to make things so they can make money, but they also use that opportunity to preach the gospel. They are involved in it personally, so we support it. And when a member is involved personally in something, we tend to want to give money to that thing, rather than just kind of objectively, externally looking at what we think is good and give money to it.
Yeah, well, you know them better. So.
We know them better. We can keep tabs on the ministry. We know how to watch the money.
Well, it develops a relationship too between them and the body and sending them. And
exactly. People care, and it's not just this weird organization that we're supporting. People now, Joe is a part of that mission, so we should listen to this mission update, and so it kind of helps. Then we have. You see, a sexton is Charles Mabula, but you know, as you mentioned, he's not in great health, and he's also got a lot of work. So, if you are this kind of person who just likes to get in and clean stuff up, man, I mean, Charles, you
that's
may not
Martha.
Be. I can see. Yeah, so if she's interested in you know anything we see.
You know, she scrubbed all those stairs down.
I heard about that. I'm really thankful.
She's amazing.
I'm very grateful for her work, and that, so. Just let Charles know what you're doing, because that would save him some.
Yeah.
He can devote himself to something else, and he's not. So, any questions about this stuff?
It was very helpful.
I hope so. There's a lot of things that just go on. You don't know how they go on or how they're actually working. Let's take a look at this sheet now. Find mine if I can. The membership, what we ask for members.
Oh, yeah, I didn't see that.
So, we try to construct membership around what we think the Bible would ask of a member of a local congregation in the New Testament. And that is, to be a member here, you're going to want to be baptized and a believer in Jesus. That's a really important thing. Now, of course, I can't peer into your heart. So if you tell me you're a believer in Jesus, I'm just going to take you at your word and trust that that's true. But one objective way that we like to measure that is by signing on to our statement of faith that I showed you at the first class. If you you guys weren't here for the first,
we got it.
Okay,
yeah,
Chris gave it to us.
Excellent. Okay, so we do ask that anyone who wants to be a member is able to affirm all of those statements about it. The one that I handed out did not include another. I don't think it did anyway. A requirement that we added 3 years ago with regard to marriage being between a man and a woman, because we were, you know, some people can say, oh, I believe in Jesus and believe in the Bible, and they'll support this other thing, and we're trying to make sure that we, even though we can disagree about a lot here, you don't have to be a Calvinist, you don't have to be even an Anglican, but we want to make sure we're all agreed on the basic essentials of the Christian faith and not screwing with those. So those are the first two requirements, being baptized, a believer, confess, good shepherd, statement of faith. Third, be here, right? so you can't I mean, that's the baseline expectation in the New Testament, is that there's no such thing as a Christian who isn't also embedded in a body. I think that would be the modern idea where I have me and my pastor Jesus, and I'm just going out in the woods and, you know, meditating on Sunday morning. That has nothing to do with New Testament Christianity, and Paul would be appalled, I think, and so would all the apostles be appalled by the way we Americans tend to view church. So we do ask that members, as long as they're not sick or out of town, commit to be here on Sunday morning. You'd be promising, making that commitment. And if you're not, one thing about these expectations is if we notice over time that you've decided not to, we'll give you a call. We'd either ask you, if you're not willing to make those commitments anymore, go ahead and leave, or we might, if you're not willing to go ahead and leave, we do have a process of discipline here that we have rarely, but necessarily a few times, had to enact when someone has been doing something against the commitments that they've made. Right?
But not so, if they weren't attenders.
We say, look, so if we call someone, say someone decided, well, I just don't see the need for church, and I'm not going to show up.
Churches where you can be a member as long as you send in money once in a while.
Send your check. You know,
really?
Presence is not necessary.
Just send your check. No, I'm not sure they have the presence in the check. So if you don't, not just you personally, if anyone doesn't show up for maybe 3 or 4 weeks, I'm going to call them and say, hey, how are you doing? If they say to me, well, I just don't feel like it's all that big of a deal, I'm going to say, now let's come in and talk about this. I'll open the Bible with them and show where it is a big deal. And if they still say, well, I don't care, I think I can still be a member here, you get my check, whatever, I'm sorry, we got to take this to the next level. Let's talk to another person. So then the Matthew 18 process would start. So it wouldn't be just, oh, you haven't been here for 3 weeks, boom. But that's not, attendance is just one aspect of it. It's anything. Like if I know one of my parishioners is, you know, cheating on his wife or cheating on her husband or abusing some substance or anything like that, I'm going to go to them personally and try to fix it, not in a disciplinary way immediately, but in a
correcting
fashion. Yeah. That's what the New Testament expects, is that we're part of communities that would be able to look over us in a caring way, not like Big Brother looking over your shoulder, but in a nice way. Oh, and she is
sign up that.
Is she able to eat cookies yet?
No.
Okay.
She's able to look at them.
So, yeah. I see the lust in her eyes. Look at that. She's looking at it. Right. So then we also ask that you commit to serve in some way. So it doesn't have to be a big thing, because I know lots of people are busy. So it could be just a small thing, like a good reading on a Sunday morning, or one way to serve. Being an usher, being a teller, or something along those lines. You don't have to be, you know, involved in a ministry that's going to take over your life, but we do ask that in some way you give time and your efforts to building up the church. Commit to study, and that's why I said if to serve, you have to be in a Bible study of some kind. So,
is that what that means? Be part of a Bible study,
or mission group?
Study at home.
We assume that, but we don't. That's not. I mean, we can't really. Yeah, we can't. We can. If you don't come to a Bible study, we can. We have a way of objective.
Does that count Christian Ed?
Yeah. So,
oh,
so
then there's one, two,
three opportunities.
Three, yeah. Actually, four for the men. The men have. They have.
Well,
none.
That's a Bible study.
Well,
so
Carmen has one.
So if you look at, so if you look at this, you know, there are this get on the bottom of the mission statement, which I didn't go over yet. What time is it? I hope I'm not gonna kill you guys. All right, so you'll notice that I've listed all the opportunities for study there.
Mm-hmm.
You have the four Bible studies that we have going per week.
And then the mission group, that would be five.
The mission group.
If you were part of a mission group.
Right, we have 4 to 5 mission groups that are running.
We could be in a lot.
So we have lots of opportunities for you to fulfill our requirement that you study. The thing is, there are some exceptions for that. So for people who are too sick to get out of the house, or just having, or people who live in Montrose, we have some people who live 45 minutes away, and getting in town to do these kinds of things are tough. So
then they look at it on Skype or whatever.
We would ask that they probably take part in it by recording, but not.
I think that's why the Sunday morning is good to include in that. Someone is traveling, they can do that.
I'll come to church, and that's when I'll fulfill that. Right.
Yeah, if I didn't have a Bible study, I would do it for about so long, and it would fall off the wayside. I know me.
Yeah. Well, it kind of keeps you connected to people and to right. That's the idea. Now, of course, we do expect that people at home are studying by themselves, and we say that often, but we don't. I can't.
You can't
monitor. So, and commit to give. We do ask that people work toward the tithe. But at the same time, we recognize that not everyone's financially there, so it's not a law. I would say not a law, but a hope for expectation. Now, that's.
Do you ever preach on tithing and monetary giving?
When it comes up in a text, I don't go out of my way to preach about money, because I think that you could end up doing that all the time, and it would be counterproductive. And I think when it's in the text, it's the most powerful. When it comes up in the Bible itself, then I'm.
Okay. You don't do the stewardship
thing. No, we don't do that. We used to have a pledge season where we'd send out pledge cards and we'd say.
I got a pledge card.
Oh, we do. So we have a special campaign going right now, a capital campaign. But normally, just for our yearly budget, we don't do that. We just expect people to. And I don't watch this. So this is one. This is the one thing that you won't be held accountable for. Yeah, I think you're going to be. We would ask the members commit to give, but I don't check your income.
Yeah.
I don't give. I don't know who's giving what. I purposely step away from the lists of people who give. So I don't know your names, and I don't know. I know your names, but I don't know how much you personally give.
Yeah.
I don't have any idea,
and
I won't have any idea. Yeah. The only way I would know that anything about your giving is if the treasurer tells me. Hey, so and so was giving this much, and suddenly they dropped. Are they okay? Because that might indicate a pastoral concern. That might indicate someone's angry about something. That I'm, and I might call them up and say, "Hey, look, I don't care about your giving. I do care about you. There's something wrong that you need to talk to me about." So the giving is something between you and God, and you can decide. I don't. What that level is.
Yeah, so. And, well, I just ask because I know the stewardship thing can be a good thing. It can also be fraught with a lot of. I did it 1 year.
It can be. It's horrible.
Well, I guess it can be, depending on who you wind up on your list and how experienced you are. I only did it for 1 year, so I'm not terribly experienced.
We used to have, with the church we visited in seminary, when you walk in, they had this outline of a cross.
Uh-huh.
So, and they had plaques on the cross, inside the cross. And on the bottom of the cross were like the bronze plaques. So if you gave up to, I think, $500 for the capital campaign, you got your name in bronze on that cross. But if you gave up to $2,000, you had a silver plaque with your name on it. And if you gave up more than that, you got a golden plaque at the top.
What a waste of money.
Near Jesus' head.
Near Jesus' head. It's a waste of money. And also, like, sent entirely the wrong message. So if you're poor, you can't be up to... There's no way. You're going to be up to Jesus' head. You're already out of luck there. You're not as holy as the rich people are.
Like everything, there's good and bad.
Right, so you'll
know. The terminology used with that was we encourage and hope. But, I mean, that's a command, isn't it, from the Bible?
I think it is, but that's one area. And so officially, we do. Yeah, it's an expectation of tithing, right? Now, there are people here who don't.
Well, you always have 10%, right?
Yeah.
So.
Who think that tithing, that we shouldn't command people to tithe because they would say that the New Testament command is over and above tithing, and so we should ask for more. Which I agree. The New Testament does have the expectation that you
bring your tithes and offerings into the storehouse.
Right. But I don't think I can, say is minimum tithe, and if I understand that's a brand new concept to a lot of people who are coming to faith, new baby Christians. The idea, I'm going to take 10% of my gross, and I'm going to give that to the church. You're kidding.
I know a lot of people will try to. I don't know how they do this, but they try to balance what they physically do for the church.
Really?
Along with their monetary, and they try to.
That's why we have these three things here. So it's not you. If you serve, it doesn't count as your giving.
Yeah.
Right. So.
I know a lot of people. Do that.
Right. Now, I will make one caveat with that. So, if your profession, for example, is carpentry, and instead, and we need you to make some stairs, instead of paying you in cash, we might just say, all right, we'll take that. Because it's your profession, and you, it's a, instead of paying you money, you're giving that, you're kind of donating that money back to the church.
Or even someone who doesn't
that.
Have a lot of money
right.
to give, maybe they can offset.
Right. Now, true, although I would say even if you're really poor, you can afford to give, if you make $10 a week and give a dollar. I mean, it's not easy. Again, this is a sensitive area, so I know there's some exceptions to this, but I do think the standard, like you say, is at least 10%. And that's something that we believe that you can monitor yourself, and the Holy Spirit can monitor with you, and that Scripture can monitor with you.
I think it's good that you don't got your hands in all that too, because doesn't Paul just, he doesn't even touch
doesn't
it.
Doesn't doesn't care. Right.
Things, so.
Right.
That's wise.
Right. God, I just don't want to know. I don't. So last thing we should look at, unless there's any questions about this, any questions about membership?
How do we get a copy of the Statement of Faith?
I can send it to you. I'll send it out by email to remind everyone what it is. So
it was pretty basic. I mean, it covered all the, it didn't have, like, you don't have to read with infant baptism, that wasn't on there.
Yeah.
Anything odd. I mean, it was all standard.
Not that infant baptism is odd. It's totally odd.
I feel like when you go through the articles, like, it's kind of like, this is what we, you know, adhere to, and this is kind of
It's like that Nicene Creed. It's really very close to
The articles are what we confess that's what I teach. That's my perspective. The church's official position is that of the 39 articles, and so that's what you'll hear preached from the pulpit. Not the articles, but the Bible from that perspective of the Anglican church. But I won't, to be a member, again, I don't enforce everyone being that. Now, if you want to be confirmed as an Anglican, then you'd want to really understand more about the articles and affirm what they say.
So the next step is we say to you, I want to be a member, and then we sign something, or what?
Yeah, so I won't ask for that today, but I'll be sending out, you know, commitment notes, and if you want to be a member, you're welcome to.
Sending through email, you mean?
Yeah. So you just print it out, sign it, and give it back to me.
And that's all there is to it.
That's all there is to it. Now I rarely have more than half of the people who go through these classes commit right off the bat. I usually have people waiting for a long time. Sometimes none of them ever do. So if you take this class and you decide, well, I don't think I want to be a member yet, that's fine. Just keep coming. Don't stop coming. You're still welcome and all that kind of stuff. But if you want to become a member, just sign the commitment paper that I'll give you, bring it back, and we'll...
And what if you decide 10 years from now you don't want to be a member? What do you do?
Oh, you can say, okay, well, you'd want to talk to me. Sayonara.
There'd be a reason, like you're moving away or something.
Oh, yeah. So if you move, then we do have like pieces of paper we send. And if I know where you're going, if you let me know I'm moving to this church, moving to that church, I'll send a note to the pastor there. And at least we'll tell him, hey, this person's in good standing. There's no disciplinary issues. Baptized, all that kind of stuff. And that way you'll have usually an easy transition into that church.
But you don't have to fill out any paperwork from the Episcopal Church.
No, I mean, the Episcopal Church, basically, you're a member if you're breathing and baptized.
I think so,
and you don't have to come to church ever.
I'm not sure to ask that.
No, I don't think so. I think it's if you're, I wouldn't either. My family is probably still considered Episcopalian. My sister, and even though they haven't been to Episcopal Church for ages, but they're probably counted on the rolls. So just really quickly, this is the last thing. I just want to look at the mission statement here, and this is basically taken from Matthew 28, the Great Commission. Our mission statement is to glorify Jesus Christ by making disciples and extending His kingdom. Okay, and then if you look underneath that, you'll see we make disciples through. So we believe that the Scripture teaches that someone is brought to faith through the preaching of the Word, or the teaching of the Word. It's God's Word that does the conversion and the sanctifying as well. So that's why we focus so much on the study of Scripture, the study of doctrine that flows out of Scripture, and worship and prayer flow from that. So the Word begins your work of being a disciple, and it flowers out in worship and prayer. And then we extend God's kingdom through evangelism, paired with works of mercy. Those aren't two separate things. And then supporting missions, domestic and foreign. And we had in the past been hoping to plant a church. That's what we had, like 170-160 people. But we're kind of backed away on that. Although I've started a group at the college, a group of students at the college to deal with questions and those kinds of things. And we meet every 2 or 3 weeks. And it could be that out of that we start at least maybe a chaplaincy or some kind of group there on campus, which we hope to do. So. That is all. So any questions here? Yeah. Thoughts? None.
No,
wow.
It's like when you're going to sign a contract to mortgage a house or something. Like,
yeah,
it's real scary, but there's really no risk.
No, I mean, there's no, I mean, I won't take anything from you. So it is a commitment. I mean, because I think New Testament membership is commitment. I mean, you're committing to follow Jesus with a certain group of people, and so there's an ask there that you should consider, because it's a very different way than we look at church. It's not consumerized. Where can I best serve Jesus is really the question you want to ask.
Yeah, just think back to your original thing of, okay, we're a member, we get to vote, so what?
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, I really think through, and I know that's not your heart, but the more I think through it, I'm just sitting in here and you hear the opportunities, you see the heart of it. I mean, you get to see why Christian Ed, why Sunday School,
right.
That was
helpful.
Yeah, you start to see that big picture, and then you can belong and buy into that and be on mission with what we're supporting, and you know why. You're on track with it. You're not just kind of floating in and out of all these different things the church puts on, but there's direction with it.
Yeah, and yearly vote, is that like as a national entity of the Anglican Church in this country, or is that a parish vote?
No, it's just their regular meeting here at this church.
Well,
to elect vestry members.
Yeah,
so
okay.
So three members of that vestry usually are two come up for vote every year. Because the term limits or terms are successive, so we meet to do that to vote.
I'm probably still struggling slightly with what little I knew about this.
Right, it's very similar.
I don't think I knew very much about it.
We haven't changed as far as structure goes.
Yeah.
Much at all from the Episcopal Church. We just changed as far as
the core doctrine.
Yeah, core doctrine, and again, the Episcopal Church membership was just walking in the door and being baptized.
Yeah, pretty
you remember.
Much. Years ago, I think they used to expect you to at least show up Easter and Christmas.
Yeah.
On pain of death.
Right. You're right. The stats when I used to have to collect them as an Episcopal pastor is you counted everybody who came on Easter and Sunday as part of your membership, even if they didn't show up at all.
Wow.
During the rest of the year.
No, you really did. You really felt them. Even it's weird the things. I don't remember anybody telling me that. But it's weird, the stuff that you seem to have this knee-jerk reaction, that you seem to know that, yeah, I have to show up for at least Easter.
Well, so you have these churches with 50 people on a Sunday morning regularly, but then they're marking down their stats that they're a church of 150 because because all of the latent members show up out of the woodwork on... Well, I think we're done. Unless anyone has anything else to say, or I'm sorry for keeping you as longer than I meant to.